During the previous lectures, I've throughout assumed that the observations were independent. So in the statistical modeling, I assumed that block maxima were independent, and I've assumed that the threshold excesses were independent random variables. Typically, at least the latter statement is not true. If there is an uproar on a financial market, say, then there's not just one big loss, but several big losses. The uproar on the market makes things happen. And what I tell you now is how one can adapt the methods I've talked about in the previous three lectures to the cases where there is dependence between observations. And the take home is that for block maxima, dependence typically might not be so important. You can just do as you did before if block lengths are long enough. For the peak zero threshold method, you will have to do different things. You have to adapt the methods a bit. So where I am now is on page 2 of lecture 4. Page 2 of lecture 4. And this is on dependence, and the title I used is Extreme Value Statistics for Stationary Time Series. So before, the topic was extreme value statistics for independent, identically distributed random variables. To have a stationary time series means that you allow dependence between observations, but you don't remove the identical distribution of the assumption. So what stationary time series means is that it's a time series, say a series of financial losses, that the distribution of this time series is the same for if you change the zero. So if you start at the 1st of January or the 1st of December or the 33rd of April next year, the statistical behavior of the time series is the same. So that's stationary time series. And this is illustrated a little bit in a very simple case on the two plots on page 2 of lecture 4. So in the left plot, you have a realization observations from a stationary time series with distribution function f of x, some distribution function. And you can see in that the series of observations, that there is some dependence. Here, just for the case of example, the dependence is very simple. You can see that the third and the fourth observation are the same, and that the whatever seventh and eighth observations are the same, and the last and next to last observation are the same. So that's an easy form of dependence you can show there, and it's actually obtained by starting with an IID sequence, and then for each time point you take the maximum of the value of that time point and the value of the next time point. So to the right-hand plot illustrates something which we'll use a bit later on, and that's a time series which is called X1 twiddle, X2 twiddle, and so on. And that's an IID series of random variables which have the same distribution function f of x as the dependent series. So what you have to the left is a dependent series of observations, And on the right, you have the same series of observations, but they are not now independent also. And what you can see from this very simple example in the top left plot, in the left plot, is that dependence makes extremes come in small clusters. So if you look at the left plot, we look at the, say, losses, percent losses, which are bigger than 2.2, I think. And you see, first comes one big loss, about 2.5, and then comes another one. And then the time series goes back to normal. That's a fairly, I mean, being exactly equal doesn't happen, but it's a fairly usual behavior for financial time series. If you instead look at the right-hand side, well, right-hand plot, well, there's only one excess of U, one exceedance of U, because they're independent, and if one value is big, there's no reason that the next one would be big. Completely by chance, the next one actually is fairly big, but it's still over U. But it could as well have been completely negative. But the right one, there is dependence. And so the question is, how do we handle dependence? And what dependence does is that extremes typically come in small clusters, in small groups. Those are the times when the financial markets are in uproar, when there's a lot of movements in the markets. So that's what's inside of the sort of ellipse, and that's a basic insight. And to measure that, how this happens, a very important quantity is called theta. That's a standard notation for it, and it's called the extremal index, and it's a parameter. And it's sort of equal to 1 over the asymptotic mean cluster length. So if you looked at the plot to the left, and you made it longer and longer, then there come more and more excesses, and you would see that it comes in these clusters will all have cluster length 2. So the average cluster length is 2. In a more general situation, in a real-time series, you again will see that the big losses come in small clusters, but the cluster lengths vary. So the first cluster is maybe sort of 2 long, the second cluster is 1 unit, just 1 observation, the third cluster is 5 observations, and so on. And so the cluster length, these numbers 2, 1, 3, are observation of a from a random variable. And the expected value of this random variable is the mean cluster length. And of course, this cluster length will be different when you use different levels U. But in the simplest case, when you have asymptotic stability, this mean cluster length stabilizes when the threshold U becomes large. So the larger the threshold or level U is, the more you have the same distribution of cluster length, and then the same mean cluster length. So the extremal index is 1 over the asymptotic mean cluster length. And the very important and very basic result from asymptotic extreme value theory is if you look at the maximum of n observations, denoted capital M, index little n, of n observations from a time series, and you look at the distribution of that, very often this looks like approximately like the marginal distribution function, the distribution function f of x to the power theta n. So if you remember, for the independent case, IID case, the distribution of the maximum would be f, capital F of x to the power n. Now, instead of the power n, we have the power theta n, and this holds for n large and then x large, typically, it's approximately. Sorry. And the theory, the probability theory, also says that theta is between 0 and 1. So it works like if you have dependence, you get the maximum, not necessarily of n IID variables, but things behave as if you had maximum of, say, theta n IID variables, where theta might be smaller than 1. So instead of n observations, it works like as if you had, say, 0.5 or 0.7 of n observations. And typically, these small clusters of extremes, they are typically independent of one another. They are separated and dependents have disappeared. And they typically have the, for stationary time series, they have the same, the clusters themselves have the same distribution. They are independent and have the same distributions. A pretty strange, the third bullet point is a pretty strange probability result, is that typically the tail of the cluster maxima, the distribution function of 1 minus the distribution function of cluster maxima, is just the same asymptotically as the distribution of the tail of the marginal distribution of an IID, the associated IID sequence. So if you instead look at the cluster maximum, so in the left plot, that's, they are actually the same, but the maximum would be 2.4. And then the next cluster, the maximum would be maybe 2.7 and so on. If you look at these values, their distribution function is asymptotically the same as the distribution function of the tail of the distribution function f itself. A fourth result from the probability theory of extremes is that, again, the generalized extreme value distributions are the only possible limit distributions for stationary time series, just like in the independent case. And this, of course, holds under conditions, and basically the conditions is that the dependence is not too strong or not too long range, not too persistent in time. Now, what does this probability theory told you about do to the statistics we want to do? Well, on page 3 of lecture 4, you see what happens to the block maxima method for stationary time series. And what it says is just if blocks are sufficiently long, then block maxima typically are approximately independent. And one can use extreme value statistics in precisely the same way as for IID sequences when you use block maxima. I mean, if you use yearly maxima, typically maybe if you have a financial sort of event happening, that lasts maybe for a few weeks or maybe a month, but not for an entire year. So what happens next year will be independent of what happens this year, except if the event happens just around 31st of December, which is fairly unlikely. So again, on page 3, the block maxima method for stationary time works precisely the same way for a stationary time series as for a series of IID observations, provided block maxima are sufficiently long. But this is not the case for the peaks over threshold method. It has to be adapted to dependence. And the way it's done in the Cole's book, and the way it's done customarily is as follows. There's another option, but this will not be in the present course. It's as follows. This is page 4, the PXO threshold method for stationary time series. And one does it in 4 steps. First, you decluster. You first somehow identify the clusters. You somehow identify approximately IID clusters of large values. The cluster you saw on the previous slide. And the many methods for this, and more advanced and maybe better methods are appearing right now, but won't be covered in this course. And one method is a block method. You divide observations up into blocks of fixed length R, so the total number of observations is a multiple of R. And then you say all values in a block which exceed U is a cluster. So maybe a block might be the 10 first observations, and all the excesses over the level U of the first 10 observations would be the first cluster. Then you look at observation 11 to 20, and all the excesses in this block would be the observations in the second cluster, and so on. The blocks runs method, which is maybe the one you should use, is you do as follows. You say you have your time series and you have your level U, sort of chosen as discussed earlier. And then you say the first cluster starts at the first exceedance of U and contains all excesses of U with a fixed length R after that, maybe 5 or 10 or whatever. What R is something which depends on the problem, and you typically have to try with different values of R. And then, so now you have the first cluster. You started with the first exceedance of U, and you took all the excesses, starting with the success and all the excesses up to R unit, time units after. Then, if dependence is really reasonably short range, the values after that will be below U, and then for a while. And then you get a new exceedance of U. And then you say the second cluster starts at the next exceedance of U and contains all the excesses of U within the time distance R thereafter. And then you continue. You get the third cluster and the fourth cluster and so on. The simplest method, but typically not a good method in financial risk, is the runs method. The first cluster starts with the first exceedance of U and stops as soon as there's value below U. The second cluster starts with the next exceedance of U and so on. And in environmental statistics, that can somehow, but maybe not that often, be completely okay. In financial risks, is typically not, because typically returns starts to fluctuate up and down when a financial event happens. So maybe first there's a big loss, and then there's a recovery, and then a big loss again, and it goes on like this for some units of time. Okay, anyway, now in step one, we have somehow defined clusters. So we now have a number of IID clusters which we want to use for our analysis. And we do two things. We first estimate the extremal index by the number of clusters divided by the number of exceedances. This is an estimate of the extremal index. It's called theta hat because we call the extremal index theta on the previous slide. The third step in the POT method for stationary sequences, as given on page 4, is that now you go back to using standard IID PXO threshold model, but with excesses replaced by cluster maxima, and exceedance times replaced by times when cluster maxima occur. So now you just look at the cluster maxima and you assume that these are IID, and then you do as usual, and you forget about the other observations in the cluster. Then these gives you an estimate of the tail of the distribution function, F, as discussed in the earlier slides, in slide 2. And then if you want to go from the peak so threshold method to the block maxima and back, then you can use the formula which is number 4 on page 4, that the probability that the maximum is less than or equal to x is approximately equal to f of x times theta n. So thank you.